Welcome back to this week's DBM Strategy Call Part 1. The financial markets handed us another tumultuous week with some interesting twists for those keeping an eye on the big picture. We are living in a world right now where bad news is spectacular news, and a weak economy is exactly what the doctor ordered.
Total upside-down logic for sure, John. The market is currently operating under a regime of the worse the macro data, the better it is for asset prices. We had a shortened trading week stateside, and the major indices seemed to love the bad news. The Dow hit a record high of 52,900.07, up 2% on the week. The S&P 500 added 1.8%, and the NASDAQ rose 2.1%, even with a little tech wobble on Thursday before Friday's closing.
Let's jump straight into the catalyst for this unlikely rally because it ties directly into our macro segment. The defining moment of the week was Thursday's June jobs report, which dropped a day early. Let's take a look at the macro breakdown where weak is the new good.
Oh, it was a massive miss. The U.S. added just 57,000 jobs. To put that in perspective, Wall Street consensus was sitting at 115,000. It's the weakest print we've seen in 4 months. On top of that, the Labor Department went back and revised April and May down by a combined 74,000. Even though the headline unemployment rate technically fell to 4.2%, it did so for the wrong reasons. The labor force is shrinking. Participation dropped to 61.5%, the lowest since early 2021.
Right, so structurally, the labor market is flashing yellow lights, but risk assets threw a party. Why? Because of the new guy occupying the big chair. Ever since Kevin Warsh took over as Fed chair back in May, he's made price stability his absolute North Star and completely killed off forward guidance. He's letting the data speak meeting by meeting.
Exactly. When May's jobs report blew the doors off, everyone panicked that Warsh was going to hike rates. This cool June print did the exact opposite. Traders completely took a September rate hike off the table, pushing expectations out to October at the absolute earliest. The 2-year Treasury yield cratered on the news. In this market regime, bad economic data buys the Fed a reason to stay patient and keep interest rates right where they are.
But while the broader indices celebrated, the dominant trade of the last year, the AI CapEx bubble, is showing serious foundational cracks. It's a tale of two markets right now. The AI CapEx bubble meets reality.
Yeah, the divergence is stark. The Dow is hitting all-time highs on boring, defensive stocks and financials, while the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 is getting dragged down by the very names that carried it up all year. We saw a brief relief rally on Monday. Tesla jumped 8%, and Alphabet rose 5% on the news it's replacing Verizon in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But by Thursday, the chip sell-off entered its second brutal week. Micron sank 7%, Applied Materials dropped 7.4%, and Tesla gave back 7.5% despite a decent deliveries report. Investors are loudly asking, as expected, have these AI valuations run too far ahead of actual revenue?
And we got two massive corporate headlines this week that practically scream we overshot on spending. First, OpenAI reportedly floated a proposal to give the U.S. government a 5% stake, worth roughly $42.6 billion, with Sam Altman trying to frame public ownership as a grand way to distribute AI benefits, echoing the suggestion of Bernie Sanders earlier in the year. But coming right after the reported IPO delays, it smells like a desperate attempt to find alternative funding for their astronomical compute bills.
And don't forget Meta. Meta literally announced they might start selling their excess compute capacity. If that isn't a telling admission that their massive capital expenditure overshot actual consumer and enterprise demand, I don't know what is. The supply of compute is temporarily outstripping the immediate demand, and the market is punishing tech for it.
Okay, let's pivot to geopolitics, because this is providing a massive disinflation tailwind for the macro picture. Over in the Middle East, the core ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran is holding, even if things are occasionally fraying at the edges as the theater continues to drive the narrative.
Both sides have agreed to stand down for now. The 60-day negotiating window is still fully intact, and the real-world impact is visible in the energy markets. Shipping through the strait has normalized. Saudi oil exports bounced back to about 90% of pre-war levels, and the UAE has fully restored its flows. That pushed total Hormuz throughput back above 10 million barrels a day.
And the charts reflect it. WTI crude fell to around $68 a barrel, its lowest level since late February, and Brent settled down near $72. Cheap oil is the ultimate disinflation engine. It takes immense pressure off consumer pockets and conveniently makes Fed Chair Warsh's job a whole lot easier heading into the back half of the year.
All right, now let's talk about the world of digital assets, our favorite topic. Crypto finally showed some signs of life this week.
Yes, we spent most of the week grinding in the low $60,000, and the Fear and Greed Index was stubbornly sitting at extreme fear territory.
Then we saw a modest bounce of 2.3% on Thursday, lifting BTC back to around 61,500, while Ethereum jumped 5% to breach $1,706. But look, let's be real, lads. This is a modest move off deeply oversold territory, not a macro reversal yet. ETF flows are still sluggish. Structurally, the Clarity Act, the big stablecoin and market structure bill, stalled out in the Senate right before the July 4th recess due to internal political deadlock over anti-money laundering and ethics provisions. The Democrats are pulling every trick in the book to delay the inevitable. On top of that, capital that usually rotates into crypto has been sucked into the vacuum of the AI trade.
Right, but the pace of selling has slowed significantly compared to the absolute bloodbaths of May and June, driven by the overreach in AI we discussed earlier. The bears are hitting a wall. $58,000 is firmly established as the line in the sand for key support, and the bulls need to reclaim $64,000 to flip the short-term narrative. But Sarah, you brought some incredible data to the table regarding where Bitcoin sits right now relative to its historical life cycle. Walk us through the 200-week moving average print.
Yes, well spotted, John. This is the chart that changes everything if you have a Bitcoin price horizon longer than 5 minutes. This week, Bitcoin officially printed 5% below its 200-week moving average. Historically, the 200 WMA is the absolute floor of the secular Bitcoin market. It's where the tourists get cremated and the permabulls start calculating their retirement dates. Let's look at the historical base rates for median forward returns whenever BTC gets dragged down near or below this 200 WMA line. See the image opposite for a detailed breakdown.
Those numbers are absolutely staggering. If the historical base rate holds true, we're talking about a six-figure Bitcoin inside of 6 months and $250,000 in 2 years.
Exactly. When Bitcoin gets dragged under the 200 WMA, the forward return profile stops looking like risk and starts looking like the market offering you a beach house because everyone else is busy missing the point. Volatility is simply the price of admission.
So as we look forward into Q3, the macro landscape is completely turning over. The Middle East supply shock is fading, oil is at pre-war lows, and the June CPI data coming in mid-July is expected to show sharp disinflation, giving Chair Warsh a perfect reason to hold and stay patient right on cue for the midterms.
The macro backdrop is fundamentally supportive. The wild card is the AI trade. It's overowned, showing systemic cracks, and those cracks have absolutely nothing to do with macro liquidity or geopolitics. It's pure fundamental exhaustion. The next big tests to watch out for are the CPI release on July 14th and Warsh's late July FOMC meeting.
It's going to be a very interesting summer, especially as we overlay onto this outlook our DBM level positions and anticipated yields and liquidity event, as driven by our ownerships of real-world Web 3.0 use cases and carefully allocated altcoin ownerships and staking. Be sure to plug into part 2 of the DBM strategy call this week as we deep dive into the latest activities we can affect and how our work to catch the bottom of this latest BTC bear stands us in great stead to ride up the next cycle. See the show notes for access and stay sharp. We'll see you next time.